Coming to you direct from the heart of New York City, all the way to wherever you are, you're listening to the VIP Jazz War Report. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. And today, we're going to get advice on the state of marriage in our lives within the context of religion and reality. Paul Newman, the actor, once said, "People stay in marriage because they want to, not because the doors are locked." However, the way I see it, in today's world, it seems people also get out of marriage because they want to and because they do feel locked inside. And what a show we have for you today, because I have a bold and beautiful lady who seems to defy description because she is so many things to so many people. She's an international speaker, a best-selling author, and co-founder of the Messenger International Ministry. And with a book she wrote called The Story of Marriage, I thought she'd be perfect for helping us better understand the so-called story of marriage within our lives. And as we know it today, it's an honor to welcome Lisa Bevere. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Hey, I'm so thrilled to be with you.
Oh, I'm thrilled too. And you've written a book called The Story of Marriage, right? And everyone has their own story. What made you write it?
You know, actually, our children made us write it and our staff made us write it. They said, okay, you two are Sicilian Apache Indian French, that's my part of the equation, and then Dutch, Irish, and Italian, and somehow you're making marriage look easy. We all have seen you guys go up and down and have conflict, and yet you fight for your marriage, not just, you know, in it. And we want to know how you put these pieces together. You know, you're saying what you opened up with. There are so many people, they are looking for reasons to run instead of reasons to build. And we also did not like, and again, I hope I'm not hurting anybody's feelings here, but most of the Christian marriage books that we look like said you had to say, okay, you need to build a 3-bedroom, 2.5-bath, the wife doesn't talk, the man is really strong, this is what it looks like if you guys are godly. And we just did not like that. We said everybody has the right to build according to their passion, according to their season, according to their purpose. They have the right to construct the house, the marriage that they're going to live in, according to what their desires are, and nobody should put constraints on them. So we wanted to kind of provide a blueprint for people to build their own story of marriage.
You know, in your book, you said, which is actually a very fascinating and interesting book, you said Jesus still thinks marriage is a story worth telling. Now, if someone was to read that book and you know, if the critics were to say to you, was Jesus married, though, for him to say something like that?
Well, and there's a reality question of no, he's not married. Mm. He's, you know, he was single. He walked on this earth for 33 years as a single man.
Right.
But then there is the theological answer that Jesus is waiting for a bride, that he is coming back for a bride, and it's supposed to be the church that is without spot, wrinkle, or blemish. And so everything about our Christian relationship is captured in what we actually see as a very flawed dynamic of marriage. Jesus is coming back for a bride that he is hoping is after him, longing for him, wanting him. And he said, okay, I'm leaving, I'm preparing a home, and I'm coming back for you. And so God thinks marriage is powerful, or he wouldn't have used it as that framework to tell how he relates to his people. And so that's the dynamic that we need to say. We don't just throw marriage aside. It's actually something where we work it out in our lives. And, yeah, I think the church doesn't necessarily look like what Jesus would want us to look like right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that we're in process, and I think we have a chance to change that.
But then, you know, going back to reality, why the struggle in marriage in today's world? Because, you know, the way I see it, in a world of plenty that we live in, why are we lacking in this most basic of unions? Because, you know, we can have thousands of friends virtually on social media like Facebook and Twitter and all that, but we seem to be having trouble with just one friend in reality, the spouse.
Yeah, no, it's the truth. And here's the thing. We have a generation that has all of these connections and yet lacks the ability to make intimate union. They don't know how to deal with what is in front of them. So they actually escape into all these virtual relationships on Facebook, virtual relationships on Instagram. They're looking in on other people's lives rather than building what actually is going to require a whole lot more work, which is their union, their marriage. And, you know, we've got a dynamic right now where a generation hasn't had intimacy modeled for them. And in the times of abundance, in the times of plenty, people aren't historically at their best. They're usually a little bit self-centered, selfish. Everything that we see in media and entertainment says that I'm going to have a husband, he's going to come into my world, and he is going to make me the center of his universe, and he is going to anticipate every single one of my needs. He'll never disappoint me. He'll understand my heart. He'll say, I complete him. And that's just not going to happen. And so you have people looking for something they don't even know how to give themselves. And so we need to flip this. And the truth is that marriage is this dynamic where you are forced into an intimate relationship with somebody that you may not even like at that moment. You know, I remember, Vip, when I first got married to my husband, I was kind of like, I liked you better dating. I need you to go away. I need some space. I need some room. And there's a lot of people that, you know, they'll say, oh, yeah, you should go get that. Well, actually, I needed to ask why. Why I needed more space, why I needed more room was actually there were certain things that John was annoying me in that needed to actually be worked out in my life. Wow. I'm not saying that, you know, you don't need to go for a walk or something, but he brought some things to the forefront that I was able to hide in a dating or virtual relationship.
Why is dating more fun and more meaningful than marriage at times?
Because people are on their best behavior for dating. They're entertaining, they're celebrating the future of a relationship, they're exploring, they're asking questions, they're having conversation. And I think both men and women, because everybody gets hard on the men, but I think both men and women after marriage kind of like, hey, this is done. You know, that's I can't even tell you how many men have said how frustrated they are, how their wife always looked her best, made sure she took care of her body, made sure that she was excited to see him. And then when they get married, they're like, did I get tricked? Because this is not the woman that I'm seeing anymore. And, you know, I've heard women say the same thing. He just watches TV. He ignores me, doesn't pay attention to me. So I think we do need to actually continue to date our spouse, but on a different dynamic. You know, my husband and I, the first couple years in our marriage, we became experts in one another's weaknesses. Somehow when we were dating, we were experts in one another's strengths. Hmm. But as soon as we got married, I was like, oh my gosh, I know why I am in your life. I am in your life, John Bevere, to change you. I have insight and vision that I can make you into a perfect man. I had no idea how off kilter you were on this. If you will just work with me, I can change you from the man you are to the man you could be if you would just listen to me. And the truth is my husband had had a vision of his own, visions of a sweet, supportive, submissive wife. And for those first 4 years, our marriage looked like WWF wrestling, except for when we were at church, except for when we were around other couples. Then we pretended to be perfect. And it was the most exhausting, isolating moments of our life because we were intimate with one another, but disconnected and isolated. So we were living in intimate proximity, but had no connection. I felt like I was living with the enemy, and he felt like he was living with the enemy. And it was an awful, awful time period. And so if a marriage is going to work, we must become experts in one another's strengths rather than weaknesses.
So were you ever close to divorce then?
Oh, my gosh, yes. You know, I remember I had just had my first baby, and my husband was, you know, he was young, he was focused, he was negligent of me emotionally. He was, in my opinion, negligent of our son. He wasn't giving us any of his time or energy. And I called a man, and I said, I can't do this anymore. I cannot do this. I'm not going to live a lie. I'm not doing this. And he said, Lisa, you have 4 years invested into this marriage. He said, can you give him 2 weeks? And I thought, well, yeah, I can give him 2 weeks. 2 weeks doesn't seem like a lot. Mm. And I'll just be honest with you, Vip, I had a young man who was paying attention to me at work in the way that my husband was not paying attention to me. Nothing sexual, but very emotional. Somebody that would compliment me, somebody that was taking me out, somebody that was celebrating me, somebody that was noticing me. And I was a young girl. I was 26 years of age, and I was very vulnerable to that. Mm. And I remember my husband, He was complaining about me, I'm sure, to somebody else, and they came to them and they said, listen, you need to turn your heart back to your wife, and you two need to move forward. And so it was a wake-up call. I actually really understand how adultery happens because of this open, gaping need that happens in a marriage, and then somebody else comes along and begins to meet it. And then when you don't actually you let your spouse know that you want them to meet it, then you become very vulnerable to this kind of breach in your relationship. And so, yeah, I mean, that was the first 4 years of our marriage, I was definitely positioned for divorce. Now, we've been married 34 years this
right.
year, so that was 3 decades ago.
Well, you know, you mentioned an interesting point, and I think you mentioned it twice, that you felt he was being negligent. At the end of the day, you're a wife, I'm a husband. And, you know, you obviously talk to your girlfriends, I talk to my guy friends. We never think of ourselves as being negligent. What we're actually doing is we're actually focusing on our career in order to make a better life for the family. And we are hoping that the strength and love that's there is greater than the test of perceived negligence, if you know what I mean. I'm not, like,
absolutely.
You know, if I was married to you and I'm busy working, it's so that you and I can have a better life. You might be feeling neglected, but I'm actually trying to improve what we have.
Well, I was definitely selfish, and I definitely was looking at everything that was not instead of what was. And the truth is, I was working full-time. Mm-hmm. He was working part-time. And so he was pursuing kind of moving out of his career into the ministry, and I was working full-time as a television producer. And so I had a really high-demanding job, and so I was like, he doesn't do this for me, he doesn't do that for me, he doesn't do this for me, he doesn't do that for me. And I was taking the stress, and I still remember, I didn't know how to be a wife. To be honest with you, John was a much better husband than I was a wife, because I thought that I should treat my husband as though he was a little boy. And so I would nag him. Mm-hmm. I would criticize him. I would try to give him little things to do, and if he didn't do it to the way I thought it should be done, well, then I was like, just forget it. I'll just do it. And so I had created this crisis situation where I was overworked, I was stressed, I was uncomfortable, and I remember I would have to take showers to try to relax down at night, and I was in the shower one night, and I was just saying, you know, I can't believe this. I mean, I just ask him to pick up the baby at this time, or I just ask him to do this, and he doesn't do this. And I heard the Spirit of God say to me, you don't think your husband is a good head of the household, do you? And I thought, no, I don't think he is at all. He said, you think you can do it better. And I said, I know I can do it better. He said, well, I've made you the head of the household. He said, it's a yoke to you, but it's a mantle to John. He said, throw it off. He said, all your husband has ever known is a mother. And he said, you are treating him like a little boy. He said, you need to be treating him like a wife. And a wife knows how to draw the best out of her husband. And you criticize your husband, you demean him, and every time he tries to do something, you put him down if it's not up to your standard. So he has quit trying. And, you know, Bip, I thought I was so funny. I thought I was so smart. And all of a sudden, I saw all of these conversations like a flashback, and I was horrified by what I had done to kind of stamp out our love. And I came out of the shower that night, and I wept, and I cried, and I told my husband, you know what? I want our love back. I can see that I have not nurtured that, and I want you to forgive me. I'll quit my job tomorrow if that's what it means that needs to happen to make our relationship strong. And my husband said, I don't think you need to quit your job, but I do think you need to quit thinking you're the source of everything. And that was a major turning point for us.
You also said that he said to you, give me 2 weeks.
Yes.
What happened in those 2 weeks that changed your mind?
Well, he actually began to see what he was doing, and he came back. And, you know, when you're giving someone 2 weeks, I didn't do it like, you've got 2 weeks time out. I was like, you know, I'm gonna step back from this pressure to make a decision for 2 weeks. And I began to remember again what I loved about my husband. And he was doing what you were saying. He was trying to build a foundation for our future. And so, you know, I said, okay, I've been nagging, I've been doing this, I've been giving my affection and emotional attention to somebody at work and haven't been communicating to my husband. I've been talking to my friends and not to my husband, because, you know, it's easy for the girlfriends to all go around the table and talk about how upset they are with their husbands. I've gone out to dinner with girlfriends, not even upset with my husband, and come home upset with him because of being upset with my other girlfriend.
Can you believe that? I mean, that happens to so many guys. You know, when the girls go on a girls' night out, they look all happy, they're all dressed up, and I don't know who they're seeing, and they're going to see their own girlfriends, but they're all dressed to the nines, and they're all happy. When they come back, they look really peeved off. And, you know, it makes me think men are actually better at relationships because, A, we don't hold grudges. We don't gossip about our partners to our friends. And we definitely don't turn down requests for sex.
No.
I told my wife, you know, treat me as a Las Vegas buffet. Have as much as you want.
I always tell my husband, I only married you for sex. He absolutely loves that.
No, but, you know, okay, you told me what you did in those 2 weeks, but actually it was him who said to give the relationship to. What did he do?
He actually had he sat down with a man who he trusted, who was a father figure, who poured into him and said, listen, you are not doing A, B, and C, and this is what you need to do. And so he sat down with John and he said, you have made the pursuit of this to the neglect of that. And it's okay for a season. You know, I can feel, like if my husband says, babe, I want to be home with you, but I've got to do this tonight, it's all great. But if he's just like, I've got to do this, and doesn't express that he wants me, that he values me, that he can't do without me, then that changes. And I think my husband started to speak to me in the sense that he needed me. And every woman wants to feel needed by their husband. Every man wants to feel respected by his wife.
But there's a fine line in the word need, because it can be a sense of longing.
Not used.
No. It can be a sense of longing or a sense of weakness. And women don't like to see a weak man.
No, not needy. Okay, so let me put it this way. My husband used to say, I'm the leader and you will do this because I am the leader. And I said, okay, you know what? I love you and I fear God, so I'm going to do this, but you're going to get the D, poor but passing job on that one. And then he started to get smart, and he started to say things like, I'm the leader, but I can't do this without you. And when you tell a woman that she is irreplaceable and that you cannot do without her, then she will step up to the plate like nothing else, because she wants to know that she is your one and your only, and she's irreplaceable, and that you have a need for her. And that place that she holds is reserved for only her, and she's the only one that can fill that. My husband, you know, was really smart with that, because even though I was an idiot, in areas where he thought I was brilliant, I actually said, okay, before he figures this out, I'm going to rise up to this level of expectation on his part, and I'm going to do this, because everybody grows in the likeness of the love they're shown. And men and women hear love and see love differently, and that's not wrong. It actually rounds out the whole relationship. I actually think the women have it easier because, you know, if I feed my husband, if I tell him he's sexy, that he's good looking, and I give him sex, he's happy. That's really all he really wants from me. But women, they want deep, meaningful conversation. Pardon?
I'll join that club. I'll be happy
too. Exactly. He wants to be complimented in front of other people. He wants to be celebrated in front of other. He doesn't want to be demeaned.
Right.
You know, and then I want deep, meaningful conversations, which, you know, I've learned early on in my marriage, you don't try to do that at night. When you're both tired, a lot of young mothers think, I finally have my husband to myself. And so she tries to unpack this conversation with him, and he's like, listen, this is the two options. We either have sex or we're going to go to sleep, but we are not having a deep, meaningful conversation. And then she'll be upset because she's finally alone with him. So you have to create opportunities early in the day for that to happen. And it's not because either of you are wrong. It's just that it's not going to happen at night.
And, you know, going back to what we were talking about, the dating, dating versus marriage, you know, dating and mating seems to be working so well compared to marriage. But going back to the fundamentals of what you were saying, here's the dilemma. In dating, you're at your best behavior. You show genuine care, you genuinely listen. You go to nice places and focus on sharing nice moments. And that's why, I guess, dating works great. Now, in marriage, what gets in the way is now you're building a future together. You're building a foundation. And if you can't be yourself in marriage, doesn't one feel like they're constantly being a hypocrite because it's always the best behavior, best scenario? And real life is not like that.
Well, I would definitely feel a lot of ridiculous pressure if I couldn't be myself and if I had to pretend to be who I'd been on a date. Because a date is best behavior, but marriage is, and I think your key word is the together thing. Mm-hmm. You know, in a dating, I'm trying to impress somebody and they're trying to impress me. I would hope that when you get married, then it's no longer we're trying to impress each other. It's that we're going to bring out the best in each other because we're intimate allies and we have a mission, mm-hmm. we have a goal, and we're going to build something together. So now it shifts from, do you want me and do I want you, to this, it's us now. And what this us is going to be amazing. And how are we together going to make that happen? And that means that, you know, it's going to look different in different seasons. And, you know, I know for my husband and I, we did a lot of things wrong on purpose because we're both Italians and we like to fight at times. But we did a lot of things right by accident as well. And one of those things was that building together dynamic. You know, the vision, you know, like when you say a man is saying, I'm out here, I'm not trying to neglect you, I'm trying to build something for us. I think as long as the woman feels like she's part of what is being built, it's okay. When she has an invested interest in what's going on to the future, mm-hmm. and there's conversations, and there's dreams, and there's visions as a couple, and they're writing that story of where they want to land and how they want to build their life, their relationship, how they do kids, how they spend money, how they invest money, you know, that kind of dynamic together gives people a commonality of purpose. And then it supersedes dating. It's like we're on a journey here, and this is exciting. This is a major adventure.
Interesting.
You know, my husband and I...
Go ahead.
Pardon?
Go ahead.
Well, early on in our marriage, we used to sit in this Chinese restaurant, and we would split and order a mushu chicken because we were too poor for two entrees. And we would sit, and we would talk about what do we want this to look like 20 years from now? What do we want our marriage to look like? We want to be more in love. What is that going to look like? Because we, you know, you kind of think, okay, this is the best part, but it isn't the best part. It's just the beginning part. What do we want our marriage to look like? What do we want our family to look like? Are we going to give our kids allowances? Or are we going to only pay them money for extra chores? Are we going to build a house that's beautiful and fancy? Or are we going to build a house where everybody feels comfortable and our kids invite their friends over? Are we going to travel? What's going to be important to us? Us, not just me, not just him. What's going to be important to us? We're going to eat dinner at home. We think life happens in the kitchen. We're going to play with our kids a lot. We're going to do dynamics. How are we going to discipline? How are we not going to discipline? We're not going to discipline in anger. We're not going to undermine one another. How are we going to speak to each other? You know, we had all of these conversations, and we wrote them down. Now, interesting, there's actually a scripture in the book of Malachi when it says that when those that fear the Lord, which means really that we're going to honor him above anything else, when those that fear the Lord begin to speak to one another, mm-hmm. it says God listens in and takes notes. I think God actually looks around and says, who is thinking in the future? Who is willing to think generationally, legacy-wise? Who is understanding that marriage is more than just about them, but it is about what's going to pass through them, the lives they're going to contact? Who is thinking that way, that I can actually watch over their lives and begin to see this happen in their lives? Because it isn't ultimately what God can get to me. It's what he gets through me that really matters. And so, you know, I really think God was listening in to two young people, we were 22 and 23 years of age, right. who said, we don't want to do it like our parents. It's not that they did it wrong. They just didn't do it big enough. Well, my parents were crazy, so they did it wrong. But John's parents did it right.
Let me ask you this. How in marriages can you avoid taking each other for granted? Because that causes a major frustration as well.
Well, I think there needs to be a constant awe of the fact that you're doing life with somebody. A constant awe that there's, you know, there's a lot of single people that are waking up alone. And not marriage isn't for everyone. Not everybody needs to wake up with somebody else. Hmm. But I think you have to have awe of that person. I think you need to play with each other. I think a lot of people don't spend enough time laughing with one another. You know, we're ministers, and yet we spend more time laughing than we do, like, being, you know, crying and serious and angry or anything like that. We need to recreate together.
Well,
so my husband has forced me to do things fun with him and with my boys.
And that requires a meeting of minds, doesn't it? Because a lot of my friends complain that, you know what, when they want to do a fun thing with their wife, the wife always says, oh, well, I have the laundry to do, I have the cleaning, I have the cooking. So it's almost like fun.
She's saying, you need to, if you help me with all this, I can play with you later. That's really what she's saying. So, you know, if he says, okay, if I help you with this, will you go do this? Then, you know, then she'll do it. Because what she wants him to, she's playing martyr mom. She's playing martyr wife.
Right.
She's like, I really wish I could go and play, but look at all this. I'm working so hard. And the truth is, you know what? You're always going to have laundry, but you're not going to always have those moments to play. And so you need to seize those moments. I remember my husband saying to me, do you want to go play golf with me? And I said, do you see these loads of laundry? Do you think I can do this? And he's like, no, I guess you really can't. And he just left. And I thought, why didn't he understand it? I wanted him to say, let me help you sort that. We'll take the next hour. We'll sort all this, get it all put away, and then you can go with me.
See, it's always the guy's fault. What stopped you from saying, and you know, crystal clear communication, well, I can do it if you do this.
I do now.
Oh, you do now.
Now I say it. I'll say, hey, I would love to do that, and if you can help me with this, I can go with you.
Right.
And he usually gives a great solution, and then we go and do it. And again, it needs to be communication. And my husband wants to hear that I want to be with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I can look back at my marriage, and I have a couple of regrets. You know, 34 years I've been married, but that doesn't mean that I can't look at the first 10 years or the first 20 years and wish I would have done a couple of things differently.
Right.
Number one, I do wish I would have seized more of those moments. I wish that I wouldn't have been so busy about trifolding my children's underwear and cleaning the grout on the floor with a toothbrush and bleach, that I would have stopped everything, because nobody really cares about that. When we talk about memories, nobody says, I remember how mom trifolded my underwear. My boys say things that are funny, fun things, like our family went bike riding, or we did this, or we did that. They remember those moments. So, and you know, number one, that I wish I would have played with my husband more.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, I wish I would have loved him fearlessly earlier.
Lisa, you know, you're so simple, you're so profound. I wish some of the other marriage therapists I've had on the show would say it as you would and take that as a compliment.
Oh, thank you. Well, and when I say love my husband more fearlessly, you know, here's the thing. I came from a very broken family background. My parents were divorced, not once, but twice.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother, in wanting to protect me, said, don't ever give your heart to a man. He'll just trample it. And so in the back of my mind, I think I gave my heart to my husband like 70%.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I thought reserving maybe 30% of my heart was going to keep me safe, but it played out in the sense that when my husband and I hugged, I always would start patting him and then push him away. And he'd be like, I just want to hold you. I'm not trying to have sex with you. I just want to hold you. But that felt too scary. That felt too close. And I remember the day he looked at me and he said, Lisa, I'm not your father. And he said, I'm not going to leave you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to abandon you. But I am concerned about how much fun we are missing right now. Because of you holding back, do we have to be 70? And then you look at me and say, wow, you stayed with me. I wish I would have been all in earlier. And he said, you know, if that's what it takes, I'm committed to that. But we are going to miss a whole lot of fun in the interim.
Can I ask you a hypothetical personal question?
Absolutely.
If your husband was to commit adultery today, Would you be able to survive the marriage tomorrow?
You know, and in all truth, I guess I'd have to know why he did that.
Well, that's what I want to ask you. Okay?
Yeah.
Some of the reasons marriages fail today are because of mating, money, moments, mistreatment, neglect, so on. But let's talk about the adultery aspect. It's becoming more common than before. It's actually one of the greatest causes for divorce. Yet, society and maybe religion, you know, they accuse the adulterer of wrongdoing. Let's take it to a little bit of a science. Newton's law says that for every action, there is a reaction. And, you know, for every cause, there's an effect. And if we go back to adultery, adultery usually happens when one spouse fails to show, initiate, or reciprocate the love that's required to maintain that bond. So, you know, when one spouse runs out of patience, you leave the other with no choice but to seek fulfillment elsewhere. So why do we blame the reaction and never the action? I mean, the real wrongdoer is the one who does not return the love.
I agree with you, and I actually think that there is a lot of biblical background for that, because the Bible is very, very clear to love your husband and love your wife. It says not to shut down your heart towards them. It says not to defraud them of sex.
Right.
Unless it's for a very short amount of time for prayer and fasting.
Mm-hmm.
And because it knows that sex is very important to the man and to the union. And so when you have a shutdown, you create a vulnerability. And I'll be honest, just talking very vulnerably with you, my father had multiple affairs. And, you know, my mother acted like she was a victim, but I recognized we slept in two separate bedrooms. And I was like, what were you thinking? Mm-hmm. What were you thinking? You have a husband who is attractive and successful, and you kick him out of your bedroom, and then you're surprised he has an affair with another woman. No, I don't think it's the healthiest response. I think the healthiest response would have been for them to fight for their marriage. But when you shut somebody out, you really create a vulnerability. And, you know, again, I think it's people will just be selfish. You know, in my house, when we're just talking about just the sexual thing, we live with what is called the five-minute rule. I tell my husband, listen, I'm really tired, and the idea of sex sounds like a lot of work, but here's a challenge for you. You got 5 minutes, and if you can get me in the mood, you can have me. And he has never failed. So I just have to say, I'm going to be willing participant. I have to tell him, I want you, but I'm tired. So if you can make this happen, it will happen. And so I make it a high priority.
Well, how about just a quickie then and letting him get it over and done with?
Whatever. Yes, whatever needs to happen. I'll just say, this is, it doesn't have to be an ordeal. But I let him know that I want him.
Okay.
I don't just say no. And I think a lot of people, you know, they've got this expectation and, you know, they're not understanding. And then women are reading more and more pornography right now where they've got an idea of how a man needs to treat her. And it's not what they're seeing in their home. And it's not even a real thing. And so they're comparing their husband to these other people. And it's stealing their ability to connect with them. So, yeah, if my husband committed adultery, I'd want to know why. If he said, hey, I decided just to, I was on the road and I was traveling and I decided just to strike up a relationship and I realized it was wrong and I gave her all the affection and attention I should have given to you or whatever, you know, I would think we would survive. You know, if I think emotional betrayal is harder for me than sexual betrayal. But, you know, I'm Sicilian, and there is always that threat that I might say, yes, I'll stay married to you, but I'm going to have to take your testicles because I don't want to see this happen again. But, no, I know it's a hard thing. I just think that we can affair-proof our marriage by building a strong marriage. And I don't think it necessarily happens unless we are really negligent in a particular area of our marriage.
And I do find, you know, the different forms of media, and even if it's pornography for females, it's giving not the right idea to women of what men really want. You know, like that 50 Shades of Grey movie. Well, not every guy has a sex chamber. And not every guy is into, you know, some form of bondage, or they just might just enjoy a Kama Sutra sex.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think media, social media is in a way allowing husbands and wives to pollute their marriages. I mean, like, you know, with the Facebook and Twitter and all that, we're actually busy minding other people's business than our own.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think conversations need to openly happen.
Mm.
But I do think all this comparison stuff is really stealing people's intimacy. It's not about techniques, it's about intimacy. And if you have a conversation and you're intimate in your marriage, then you can have conversations that say, hey, you know, I feel like we need to spice this up a little bit. I'm feeling like we always are doing the same thing over and over again. What do you think? And what do you like?
And most women reply and say, oh, that's disgusting, or I'm not doing that. And they frown, and they sort of, just by a frown, you could belittle your spouse.
Right. And you don't want to shame either person. You know, I think that you should say, and I do think things should happen where both people are comfortable with stuff and both people don't, you know, feel stripped of their dignity or anything like that. I think there's a lot of stuff out there right now. It's a little bit crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that 50 Shades of Grey dynamic. Like, who seriously is a billionaire and how often does that really happen?
Right.
But I do think that you have different seasons in your life where you can enjoy different things in your marriage because you don't have kids running in. You don't have, you know, different dynamics going on where you should have conversations and things change. But yeah, no, I don't think there's too many people that don't talk openly about things that they need to talk openly about. And unfortunately, timing can be an issue on that. Like if you are, you know, feeling pressure or you're feeling, if a woman feels uncomfortable or fat or unattractive, she's going to say, I don't want to do that because she's going to be measuring it by herself. You know, so I think if people can talk about things openly, then you don't shame somebody, and then they can have that. And I do think most adultery isn't just sexual. I think it's usually an emotional void. I do think it's a connection. I think men feel disrespected sometimes. I think they get, and women feel disrespected or neglected. And it puts both people in a position of vulnerability. I think that sex can get, you know, just kind of boring, and then this is something exciting. So I think it depends, but I don't think adultery is what you have to end a marriage. The Bible is very clear. It says you have the right to choose because it feels like a very intimate betrayal. You have the right divorce except for adultery. That's the only legal reason, the Bible says. Then it says you have the choice. So it doesn't have to be that way.
Let me retwist the word. We keep using adultery as a bad word, but let's just sort of step out of the box a little bit. Adultery, and you said it's just not sexual, it could be emotional. So let's put that back in. Adultery is really a form of dating, if you think about it. It's emotional, it's physical, it's a meeting of minds, there's a sense of excitement and things like that. If you put that back into marriage, and where I'm coming from is divorce being a very expensive proposition these days and a painful one, is it worth for couples who are bored, who've stopped meaning anything to each other, to actually have a agreed upon separation in every aspect? You know, living the guy moves out into an apartment or whatever, and then just start dating again maybe once a week, and they don't meet each other the other 6 days.
Well, I mean, that has a lot of factors. I mean, if you have kids, that can be devastating for children. You know, wait, why did my dad move out? Or why did my mom move out? You know, this isn't just about that couple, you know, but I do think that they could go to counseling and get some tools. A lot of people think that counseling is saying you're a failure.
Mm.
I would rather go to counseling and get tools so that I can build my future strong than show up in counseling once I've already had a train wreck.
Mm.
And there is a lot of stigma, especially for Christians or people that call themselves religious. They say, oh, I shouldn't need that. Well, yeah, you actually should. because anything that is wise, we should make ourselves available to. And so my husband and I, we've been married 34 years, but at 32 years, we said, you know what, we're getting ready to go into a new season, a season we've never been in before, where we're going to be empty nesters. Mm-hmm. Let's go get some tools. And we met with a counselor, and we were able to find out that there were some habit patterns that we had just gotten involved in that were unhealthy, as well as some habit patterns that were incredibly healthy.
Right.
And just having somebody on the outside looking in and pointing that out was able to give us what we needed to change some things and build together. Right. And so it wasn't his fault, my fault. It was like, we want to do this well, so what are we going to do in the future? But, you know, they're saying that right now that in America, divorce is one of the number one causes of poverty. Children of divorce are something like four times more likely to die before they're 40. And it's just a huge fallout. So you need to fight for your marriage. Marriage is one of those dynamics that it can bring out the best or the worst in somebody. Mm-hmm. But they are still saying that married couples have better sex than the single couples that are dating. That is not what the media says, but you have it more readily available and more enjoyable is what I was a survey I read just yesterday that if you want to have good sex, be married. Hmm. And I do think it's because you have two people committed to building a relationship that has length and capacity for growth. So, you know, and again, my husband is very clear with me that, like, if you know, I try to make sure I'm strong and I'm healthy, but I dress for my husband, not for my friends. And in a lot of women, when they're dating, they dress for their dates, and then afterwards they get married, they live in sweatpants.
Or they dress for their girlfriends.
Oh, they dress for their girlfriends. Yeah,
you know,
and
who's got the best handbag and things like that.
Yeah, so I had to sit down with my husband and said, I want you to tell me how you like me to look.
Okay.
I want you to tell me how you like my hair. So he's kind of shaping me into his dream girl, and I want to always be that for him. I don't want him to look around and say, gosh, I remember when Lisa used to have her hair long, or gosh, I remember when Lisa used to work out and she was strong, or I remember when. And it's respecting one another. My body, the Bible says that my body is not my own, it's my husband's. And well, that his body is not his own, it's mine. Take care of it for me.
You use a key word, remember, in the last few sentences. And let's talk about time. You know, we live in a world where we are now told to just keep changing. Be the best you can be. It's all about you, blah, blah, blah. So that means, if people follow that, the person you married 10 years ago is not the same person you're married to today. Doesn't that add pressure to the relationship?
Well, it depends how they change. You know, my husband is a better person than he was the day that I married him, and I was crazy about him the day I married him. He is more compassionate, more loving, more focused, more intimate with me. He's a better lover. He's all those things. He's a father. I have legacy and history with them. So we've grown together. We haven't grown apart, and yet our growing together doesn't mean one person disappears. I think marriage gives people an opportunity to become the best person God created them to be. I feel more empowered in my marriage to become fully myself than I ever did single, because I was always trying to conform myself to what somebody might like. In a marriage, I already have a commitment, and so I'm going to be the best whatever I am created to be, I'm fearless, I'm passionate, I'm focused, I'm loving, I'm highly nurturing, I'm an Italian mother, I'm a feeder. There's certain things that I'm empowered to do that I wouldn't be empowered to do if I was having to change myself. I actually think you change yourself more in a dating situation because you're putting on different personas for different people than in a marriage. I'm actually becoming more fully me. I think I'm growing into all the things my husband loved about me in a fraction. Now he's gotten rid of a lot of the yucky stuff and grown into more of the fullness of stuff because in the reflection of his love, I've been able to focus on the strengths and minimize my weaknesses. And marriage is a catalyst for growth for people. And either it's going to refine you so that you are more pure and stronger and more fully awake and alive to who you are, or it is going to cause one person to be diminished and demeaned and shrink. But in the God parameter, God thinks that marriage enlarges our life, not shrinks it. And so to me, it's not so much about changing as growing into. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And, you know, we've got a few minutes left. But in your book, The Story of Marriage, on page 162, you say that healthy marriages are where one becomes a servant to their spouse. And that, you know, must have taken a lot of courage for you to say that, because that won't appeal to the majority of women out there who believe it's a sign of weakness to have that mindset.
Well, you know, they already have that mindset. They just have it with the wrong person. Most women serve their children and try to train their husband. And we're actually called...
Can you repeat that? They
children.
Try to...
Yes.
Go ahead.
They serve their children and train their husbands.
Wow.
And we're supposed to actually train our children and serve our husbands.
Somebody and give me an amen. That's what I like.
Yes, that mindset needs to be shifted. And my husband serves me, and it doesn't always look like serving to me. Like, I was thinking, I'm making dinner, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. You're not serving. He's like, okay, let's come into my office and let's talk about how I serve. There's not one bill not paid on time. I'm making sure that our investments are growing. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. This is how I serve. I don't know how to cook, Lisa. I don't know how to do that. This is the way that I serve you. So it looks different. The problem is most women want their husbands to serve them the way they think they should be served. So they want them to clean up afterwards, or they want them to do this. They really want another wife. They don't necessarily want a husband.
Most women expect us to think, whereas we are expect to be told. That's the difference.
My husband told me, stop hinting.
Yes.
A long time ago, he said, I need you to stop hinting because I'm failing. I need you just to tell me what you want, and I can deal with black and white.
Mm-hmm.
But this dynamic of trying to train our husbands is a failing thing. If I tend to point out my husband's weaknesses and thinking that's going to minimize them, it's wrong. The truth is, if I celebrate his strengths and say, I love it that you're decisive, I love it that you're this, I love it that you're that, I am your ally, not your enemy. You do not need to use that against me. I'm for you. Let's do this together. If I can be intentional and I can be clear, then he ends up growing. Same thing with me. But, yeah, a lot of women, they act like they don't want to be servants, but they do. They want to serve their kids. And they'll even serve their friends. I don't know why they can't just transfer that to their husband. Because at the end of the day, that's who you're going to end up with.
Well, we've almost come to the end of the show. I've fallen in love with you in the last 48 minutes. Lisa, where can we get your book?
Well, they can get it on Messenger International, which is our website, or they can go to my particular website, lisabevere.com. And it's there. It's on Amazon. It's called The Story of Marriage. And I am so excited that they're going to have tools to write it. They don't have to write it like mine, but they're going to be empowered to write it according to their dreams. And, you know, I just want to say this. There may be people listening, but I just want them to know it's never, ever too late to begin again.
Thank you, Lisa, and we're going to have you back on the show very soon.
Sounds great.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. Your comments and your follow are so very welcome on my Twitter account at Vip Jaswal and my Facebook page, The Vip Jaswal Report. A special shout-out of thanks to my wonderful team, William Sanchez and Rick Buser. I'll be back next Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern with more fascinating stories that fill our lives with the inspiration and information we so need to kickstart the week. Wish you a wonderful evening tonight with your family and loved ones. And until next Sunday, have a productive and a very happy week ahead.